Hello and welcome to the new Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and my co-host Phil Jones, Managing Director of Brother UK, better known to the cycling community as Road Phil. Phil, good to see you.
Thanks, Tim, and I'm really excited that we've got this podcast together at long last, where we're really going to dive beneath the surface of what's really going on in the UK road cycling scene, bring some of the best riders, the best managers and the best personalities behind the sport, get them in the studio and start telling the stories about why this sport is so great in the UK.
Coming up in today's show, Simon House, General Manager of CAMS Tifosi, the elite UCI women's team, and also of Team Brother UK on form.
How do you keep the riders sort of motivated, fit, when effectively it looks like at the minute a lot of the race programme is sort of disappearing in front of our eyes?
Yeah, it's challenging. It's going to be challenging. There's no question about that.
We couldn't have begun this year thinking about something called the coronavirus, and now it's decimating the calendar. Michelle Jenner, Simon Howe's partner and unofficial personal manager.
He said, I'm just going to do the team kit. And I said, well, I just need to try and do a casserole. So I'm sort of stood amongst all the kit while I'm, you know, chopping carrots and trying to get the dinner in. So got the dinner in and then we carried on. About an hour and a half later, everything was bagged up ready.
And Rebecca Richardson, Welsh Hill Climb champion.
And I remember just this moment where I could sense that she was getting tired and I was tired. And I remember wanting just to say, it's okay, Mum, I'll take the weekend off. And I was like, no, we're almost there. I just said to her, like, Mum, we're almost there. We're going to get there. And then, you know, like 3 weeks down the line, you know, it was all over.
And our guests today are living, breathing illustrations of the value of goodwill and family support in domestic cycling and how that combines with the support of a major business like Brother UK. Simon Howes is the founder and general manager of Team Brother UK Onform, a development team. He's also the general manager of the CAMS Tifosi UCI women's team, which last year, of course, was Brother UK Tifosi powered by Onform. And if you're confused at this stage, don't worry, because we will be discussing in depth the transformation of that team. We'll also discuss Phil's goal in bringing new money into the sport. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, all.
We're also joined by Michelle Jenner, who is Simon's partner and probably personal manager as well. She is the lady without whom neither team, Brother UK on form or CAMS Tifosi, would function, and we'll find out exactly how Michelle helped Simon to keep the show on the road in this episode. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning.
Finally, we're joined by Rebecca Richardson, athlete, rider, mother, business owner, lecturer, Welsh Hill Climb champion, Mansell Hill Climb champion, and somebody who relies, I think, on her own support network within the family and within the sport to represent Brother UK as a member of Team Brother UK on form and also as a sponsored athlete in this year's Hill Climb campaign. Rebecca, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so Simon, let's start with you. You and I first met in 2013 when you were running IG Sigma Sport, a men's UCI team, but your history in our sport goes much, much further than that and began as a rider. Tell us how you discovered the sport and give us an overview of your riding career.
Yeah, crikey, now I've got to admit to my age, I guess, but my cycling, love of cycling started in 1982, obviously as a young boy. And as you say, it's progressed through as a rider, through to various levels and then through to management where we are now today. So yeah, it's been many years in the sport. And it's a sport I love and very passionate about.
I think it's a, you know, as a rider, Simon, you were sort of on the cusp of that very early development of British cycling from the Federation to what has become a superpower in world cycling. You were on the fringes of what later became the World Class Performance Plan, working with Peter Keane, I think. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so as you say, I mean, it's an amazing situation now, British cycling and British riders are in. So but yeah, slightly on a cusp, if not just slightly before, really. I took myself to Belgium, into Europe at the age of 17, 18 as a first-year senior. And you know, I'd go to races in Europe, Belgium, Italy, France, and I'd be the only British rider in these events. Now I see the start list and there'll be three or four British teams in the event. So, it's very, very different now. And it's, you know, for the better, really. It's certainly for the better. So, and Peter Keane was involved. So Peter Keane was, it was at the time when Chris Ballman was just coming through, becoming a household name, really, for his Olympic successes. And Peter was his coach at the time. So, I went down to Chichester. Peter was based when he first started, Chichester University. And, went down there for some testing and... I actually got on the national squad actually from that test. At the time, numbers, it was when it was power versus power to weight ratios. And I forget the actual figure now, but I think something like 5.4, if I can remember rightly. But that one test got me onto the national squad at the time, which, you know, is crazy that you do one test and the difference it can make. But it just shows, you know, and they've progressed obviously with those numbers and that sort of detail to where we are now. So,
tell us about your characteristics as a rider and how you've been able to call upon them as a manager. Anybody who knows you, Simon, will know that you are not faint-hearted. So I wondered how that translated on the bike and also into your later career as a manager.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I say I'm quite an extreme person, so I'll be like, you know, I'm both ends of the scale on from passion to aggression, really. As a rider, I was very motivated, as I am as a person in everything I do in life, and obviously that comes through in team management. But yeah, passions are, you know, something I'm very, very... very passionate about many, many things and things done correctly. So, as a rider, some might have said I was aggressive. I was a young man, so, you know, as a teenager, 19, 20-year-old, we're all fairly aggressive at that age. It's just commitment as well. I mean, that's a word you probably see me use or hear me use quite frequently. It's, you know, if you do something, you do it right. If not, don't do it. So, and that's how my cycling career was and now how we run our teams. So.
You, I think, this year will celebrate a unique achievement. When you and I first met, as we discussed, you were the manager of IG Sigma Sport, a men's UCI continental team that rode in the Tour of Britain. This year you'll be doing something in a parallel field with the women's team.
Yeah, so I believe that's correct. So as you say, 2013, I was the manager of the DS of a men's team in Tour of Britain. And this year it's already been announced that UCI women's team, UCR, Cam Stefosi, will be taking part in with the women's tour. So, so it'll be quite unique, I believe. So I think I'll be the first manager, first DS at both of events. So, quite a unique and quite a proud thing for me as well. So, and it just shows, obviously, you know, the years of experience I'm now achieving at management level. So,
it's interesting, you know, having made that shift from men's professional cycling into starting team on form, which although it is a mixed team now, it has a junior men's team and a senior men's team, began, I believe, as a women's team. You also had tremendous success with Brother UK Tifosi, powered by on form, now Cam's Tifosi. You're pretty well placed to describe the differences between managing female athletes and male athletes. You probably write a book on it. What's the sort of headline there?
Yeah, well, I've been asked this question a few times, really, about how do I manage the boys differently to the girls. And, I actually find it quite a difficult question to answer because I don't believe I do anything differently to either male or female. We call it the Simon way, my way. I'm not quite sure what we call it. But yeah, they're athletes. And actually, you've mentioned that in the question, really. Male or female, they're an athlete. So, they've both got the same drive, both got the same passion. So, you know, you deal with them in the same way. And actually, the difference is individually. That's how you deal. You know, a rider might need telling off or a firm word, but some actually might need the opposite. You know, they might need sort of comforting and progression and development. So, yeah, you deal with them individually. It's not so much about male, female. It's about the individual. So.
Okay. Give us a sense of the early days of Team On Form. It's grown rapidly. It's a talent pipeline now to Cam Stefosi on the female side. How did it begin in the first instance?
Oh, yeah. So, as you say, it grew very rapidly. So the first incident was I'd been to a tour series and I'd come back and decided that I would run my own team or look to put my own team together. Obviously, when you first have the first initial thoughts, there's so many things you need to put in place. Sponsorship, riders, management, support, volunteers, all those things. So the initial goal was to set up a women's team. And that spiraled. I won't quite say it spiraled out of control, but it spiraled very, very quickly from being potentially probably a sort of 6 to 8 rider women's team to, as you've already sort of mentioned, a men's team, a junior team, girls and boys. So yeah, so it went from being a 6-rider team to 40, I think, in year one. So yeah, so it was quite a mammoth task, really, a huge number of riders.
It occupies a particular place, doesn't it, on the spectrum between club cycling and professional cycling. It's an amateur team, and it is a team, isn't it? It's by invitation. It's not a club, but you're operating to professional standards. Tell us about balancing those. You know, you've got people with full-time jobs.
It's an amateur team. There's no question it's an amateur team. As you say, riders, you know, they work part-time. Everyone involved in the team is voluntary, so everyone who gives their own time up to support the team. That said, that's still not an excuse not to be professional in every single thing we do. So, so you just say, it's definitely an amateur team, there's no question, but run professionally. And that was really important to me, that as you said, it has a club feel, but results and professionalism are the key drivers, really. So, so it's very much an amateur team with professional setup.
Yeah, tell us about that setup, because it's the full nine yards, isn't it? Anybody who's been to a race and seen the team on form presence would know at a glance that you're doing the job properly.
Yeah, I mean, some might say we show off, but it's not showing off in any way. It's, as you say, it's being a professional bike rider and amateur bike rider myself, I know what my expectations are. So the team are run to my expectations. So if it's not organised or set up in the way I would want it to be as a rider, I don't believe I'm delivering the team that we should be. So, we start with the gazebo like lots of teams now do. But, you know, we were almost probably 4 years ago at sort of the forefront of gazebos and sitting around and all those
the
things.
Forefront of gazebos.
And it now becomes competition who can bring the biggest. But, we talk about staff, really, and volunteers, really. We call them staff, but, you know, they're volunteers. But in year one, we had a psychologist, and we still do now. So, you know, so we really take rider care as the key. I always say that if a happy rider, a happy racer is a successful rider, successful racer. So the more we can offer to those riders, mechanical support, soigneur support, I say psychology support, and then obviously being an organised team. Organisation is massively important. Many teams possibly aren't organised as they can be, and we try and deliver above that. So as I say, an amateur team, but with professional standards.
Rebecca, this must be music to your ears. You will have watched this from across the paddock last year. You were involved with Fusion RT, Brother UK Fusion RT, and we'll talk about that in depth a bit later. But give us a sense there from a rider's perspective of what Simon has just discussed about having that support, about creating happy riders able to deliver top performance.
Yes, so I got a bit of this experience with Fusion. You know, it was my first team to ride for, and I really, you know, was lucky that it was my first team, because Terence, you know, had a huge amount of experience, and it just so happened to be the most successful year the team had to date, and one which he retired from. So as an introduction to the kind of the sport at team level, it was a fantastic kind of experience. And then obviously you go to races and you look around and you look at the other teams. And on form are always a team that I've looked towards and been impressed by their kind of the way that they present themselves. And I think, you know, certainly of all the teams, you know, I've looked at the kind of pathway and the development aspects to, you know, Simon's approach, and always been kind of interested in that. Yeah,
and more generally that connection between being a happy rider and being a successful rider, because of course the other major part of your career, which we'll discuss later and in a separate podcast, is the hill climb, a solo event where you're very much running your own show. You're responsible for your own happiness, if that's the right phrase. Tell me about that connection and how you manage that pressure, that expectation, and make sure that you're in the best frame of mind when you start the race.
Yeah, you absolutely need to be in a good mental place. You know, you will not have performance without kind of mental stability. And beyond that, you need to have kind of actually even more than that, some positive mental kind of aspects. And, you know, going into racing, you know, it's a team sport, but it's also an individual sport too. So you have to have like your own motivations, and they need to come from kind of quite deep inside you. You know, why are you there? What's motivating you to race? And so for me, like last year, you know, with Fusion being the first time to ride for a team, I was really motivated to be a good team player and learn, you know, some of the tricks of the trade in terms of working in a team. And it gave me immense satisfaction to help some teammates who had kind of been, you know, going through the cycles of becoming better and developing as riders and then watching them succeed, such as like Claire Steeles and, you know, Emma Lewis and Molly, you know, and helping them actively in races, like covering their moves and things like that. And that was my motivation last year, and that kind of created, yeah, that created like some happy, good feelings. And then moving on to the hill climbing scene, you know, I came to the end of my road racing scene and realised I wanted to do something for myself, you know, and I wanted some of my own successes, having not strove for those in the road racing calendar. And so, I started doing the hill climbs, and I mean, I could never have imagined where it would have taken me, and it obviously did, you know, take me quite far in terms of the wins I had, and that really spurred me on for this year in the road racing season.
Yeah, it gives a sense of that, actually. I don't want to get too far into hill climbing because we're going to discuss that separately, but tell us about the role of a specialist hill climber within a road race. How are you able to put those skills at the disposal of the wider team?
Well, we did a training camp last year with my Infusion, and it was in Mallorca, and obviously it's quite hilly, and the team actually had some really good hill climbers there. So I won't beat around the bush. Like, I'm one of many fantastic, you know, hill climbers within the domestic peloton, and if they came to any hill climb competition, I would be really worried. It just so happens that, you know, most people are pretty tired by the end of the season and don't appear, so I'm quite, you know, humble about that fact. So, yeah, in the team, there were some really good hill climbers. And actually, there were some very nuanced characteristics about how people climb. So when we practiced in team training camp, it became quite evident where some people were stronger on a hill to others. And me and Claire Steeles had quite different characteristics, but could really help each other in a race. And there were a couple of occasions where I actively would pace or sit on the front going up some low gradient climbs where I was much stronger, knowing I could cover any moves and protect her as well, and going into crosswinds and knowing she had the kick, which where I didn't, to kind of come over and attack. And it did, you know, I believe it helped some results she got on a couple of races, so that was really satisfying for me. Yeah,
you must be looking to putting this skill at your disposal, Simon, this season, having somebody who understands climbing on that level. As Rebecca says, it's a nuanced activity in among the hurly-burly of a road race.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So whenever you look to build a team, when I look to build a team, you look for each rider to have their own individual characteristics, like you say, so different abilities, sprinter, climber, roller, team player, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, so it's very important. And actually, you know, that's why Rebecca's in the team, because she's our climber. So, and as we know, races, the races throughout the year, throughout the season, they vary differently from a tour centre crit to a hilly road race or a hilly stage race as well, actually. So, it'll be great when Rebecca comes to those races.
Yes. I mean, we were talking, Phil, you and I actually got quite a good insight last year. We went to the Vitus Pro Cycling, powered by Brother UK, team camp in Calpe, where they had a timed ascent, didn't they? They had a miniature hill, well, nothing miniature about it. It was a pretty serious climb, but it was a hill climb competition within the wider context of a team training camp. And it was interesting to see the different approaches that the different riders took that day. You were helping on the timing, Phil, I seem to remember.
Yeah, it was really interesting, because that uncovers then what role each rider has in the team. And, you know, you've sort of had Ed Clancy, sort of, who was, you know, he's just both brutal power, isn't he? And you could see actually the character that he bore and the sort of the status that he brought to the team was almost as important as his performance on a bike, actually. You know, he was really kind of a statesman in the team, which I thought was just great. And then equally, you've got someone like Adam Kenway, you know, who, you know, is obviously, you know, former British national hill climb champion, who's really up for it and thinking much more about his pacing. So sort of Ed was kind of like, I'm just going to try and survive and get up. And Adam's kind of like, yeah, I want to go for this, and this is going to be a really good test for me. So I think it was no better sort of demonstration of really, I guess, what each rider's role is until you come to that moment of truth of it's an almighty great big climb and we've all got to get up it, and who's going to be quickest. And there was quite a bit of competition in the team as well, a bit of banter. So I thought it was as good a team building exercise as it was also, you know, data for the you know, for Sherry Pridham to understand who's going well, who's not, et cetera, et cetera. So no, it's really fascinating. And I was very happy I was actually in the team car, because if you'd have sent me up there, I probably would have done the sort of reverse of a Strava KOM. You know, so who can be the slowest ever recorded time up? That would have been me.
They weren't hanging around, yeah. put it that way. I mean, we're on to team training camps already, which is a really good time, I think, to bring Michelle into this conversation, and Michelle to talk about your role in supporting Simon and by extension supporting Brother UK team on form and Cams Tafosi. You were telling us an interesting story earlier about preparing for the first team training camp, I think you helped with, where the mother of all kit deliveries arrived at your home address. Yes. I mean, give us a sense of that.
It was two or three quite large boxes arrived on the Friday as we were off to team camp on the Saturday. I was off to a presentation of my running club evening. So I left Simon at home with one of the riders who was staying the night, because they obviously got all excited and then wanted to take the kit on the camp. So it was sort of came home about, I don't know, 11 o'clock, and there's stuff everywhere. We got what they needed on the cases. I think we left at, I don't know, 7 o'clock the next morning. Did the team camp, walked back in the front door. Everything was then emptied all over the floor, into piles, and then all sorted out to all the kit. So there was a momentous amount of kit.
I mean, this is a world within a world, isn't it? The cycling world and, yes, and the realities of running a domestic cycling team. And yet it's not quite so strange to you, I don't think. You grew up in a cycling family.
Yeah, my brother was started as a schoolboy. So as a child, you know, most weekends were spent stood at the edge of a road waiting for him to whiz past. He also did cyclocross, so it wasn't just through the summer. We did the winter and he did track, and he's still a cyclist now in the Vets League. So yeah, so I probably had about sort of 15, 16 years where I wasn't involved in the cycling world, but still very aware. And actually then when I got back into the cycling world, it was amazing to see the same names and faces that were still sort of involved in the cycling.
It's a tight community.
Yes, very much.
And very supportive. And, yes, and the work that you do behind the scenes is kind of key to that. So re-entering the cycling world, I guess, involves the gentleman sat to your right.
Yes.
But you've known each other pretty much your whole lives.
Yes. So when my brother was a cyclist, he's slightly older than Simon. But because we all lived quite local, a lot of the races, Simon's name was quite well known, just because of his ability at such a young age. So he was very much, you know, I knew all the family for 35, 40 years.
Wow.
Yes. Hang on, Simon, you told me you were only 35.
I am.
Hang on. You've been outed. Yes. You have been outed.
Numbers are not adding up.
Yeah. I was very young.
Yeah. You see, Michelle, you made me laugh, because when we came along to the Cams Tafosi launch in the city recently, you know, amazingly attended event, and, you know, all sorts of people in the room. And you and I got chatting, and you were telling me your casserole story, which I thought was hilarious. But will you just tell us the casserole story quickly?
Again, it was when the Cams Tafosi kit launch had been landed at our front door. I'd worked from home that morning to take delivery of it, as time was getting quite tight for it to be distributed, and then sort of went into work, came home from work, and again it's all over my kitchen floor, all these piles. And he said, I'm just gonna do the team kit, and I said, well, I just need to try and do a casserole. So I'm sort of stood amongst all the kit while I'm, you know, chopping carrots and trying to get the dinner in. So I got the dinner in, and then we carried on, and about an hour and a half later we everything was bagged up ready.
Yeah, and I think this was the funny thing for me, you see, is that actually that these are the stories actually which are below the surface of all of this, is that you know, we turn up to races and we watch these races and we love seeing all the polish and the bikes and the gazebos and all the riders looking great. But actually the journey to get there is a hell of a lot of sacrifice from a hell of a lot of people. That includes your partner, your family, and all the goodwill that exists amongst this sort of volunteer community. But I thought, when you told me that casserole story, I thought, that's it. You know, I am trying to make a casserole and your kit is everywhere, is kind of, well, that's what we're all signed up for. You know, this is, if you want this sport to succeed, then this is actually the realities of what goes on behind the scenes. And this is kind of, to some degree, what we want this podcast to be about. is telling these stories and bringing them to life, the characters and the personalities, not just the riders on the bikes, but actually also the people that sit behind this entire sport and help it to be what it can be.
There's always a box of equipment, clothing, bikes, somewhere in the house, always.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something, Rebecca, where you'll have an insight too. You run your own business. You're an architect. You're a mother. You have a young son. How does family support help you do what you do to function as an athlete?
Good question. So I don't know. I'd have to go back maybe about 4 or 5 years and maybe just coming up as like a club rider, some of your kind of club kind of mates saying, hey, you should have a go at racing. And then that evolution to actually racing at this level has been, yeah, it's been a bit of a journey because initially I didn't come from a cycling family like Michelle and Simon. So I came from an active family, but never one that went to clubs or anything like that. So my dad always went up mountains, rode bikes, you know, but it was really very much like that. So to go into a very structured format of training and racing was something that my family weren't familiar with. So yeah, it's been like a learning process for everybody. And every year it feels like we're all going on this like journey and learning together. So for example, this year, like my mum, you know, in January was saying, oh gosh, when's the racing season starting? It's like, oh, this is, you know, new language. And oh, I need to get these dates in the calendar so we can start organizing, you know, childcare. And you know, so it's just been like this learning process for us all. And I remember midway through the hill climb season last year, because I was traveling every weekend and it was like quite draining for us all. And my mum was doing some extra care for Arthur, because obviously things were going well for me. And I remember just this moment where I could sense that she was getting tired and I was tired. And I remember wanting just to say, it's okay, mum, I'll take the weekend off. And I was like, no, we're almost there. So I just said to her, like, mum, we're almost there. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. Again. And then, you know, like 3 weeks down the line, you know, it was all over. And I made sure that, you know, from that point to kind of now, I really backed off any sort of real childcare support. So, you know, like you periodise, like, you know, your health. You know?
Did your mum sort of realise just how well you were doing? I mean, did you, obviously your mum was just sort of babysitting, like, how was it? You know, you do come, oh, wow, and I've got a course record. And yeah. So was she sharing in that sort of joy in that moment with you?
Yeah, exactly. And actually the one thing that I had to really do about 2 years ago was that I actually started hiding my training and hiding my biking. And this was a funny thing to do, but I'd suffered from some pretty negative people in my life, the wrong people. So some relationships I've got involved with, and you start listening to the wrong voices. They're saying, you're selfish, you're obsessed with biking, you shouldn't be doing this, like training all this time. And you listen to these negative voices and you go through like bad times where you're not biking and it's not good for you. So I got to this point where I'd actually just do no social media. And I remember one day I went to the bike club about a year later, and it was the 12-hour time trial, and I was going to do it, and I had my coach, and I'd set out everything I needed to do. Went down to the local bike shop, said, can I get some, like, can I buy 15 water bottles, please? Because I was going to hide them along the bypass for the series of 12 hours so I could stop and refuel myself. And he's like, I didn't even know you were biking still. I was like, yeah, I'm biking, I'm training, I'm doing all that. Because, gosh, you know, you're not telling anybody about it. And he goes, just ask for some support for your 12 hours. I was like, no, I couldn't do that. He's like, go on, put it on your Facebook and I bet someone will come forward and help you. And he said, you know, he did say, he goes, I just thought you were being a bit elusive by not saying what you were doing. And in my mind, it was the opposite. I was trying not to have an impact on everyone's lives by shouting about myself. And also I didn't want to have negativity. As soon as I put that message out, I got support from the chairman of the club, and we drove down and did the 12-hour. And that was like the catalyst for me starting to actually welcome support and put more stuff on social media. And so that was 2 years ago. And it's been a journey till now, where obviously now I'm really out there on social media, and I have some really good management strategies for any negativity. You know, that it doesn't come into play. I only listen to positive voices.
Tapping into that support on the day of the 12-hour, gaining the support of the chairman, did that by itself lift your performance?
Absolutely. I realised I could not have done that 12-hour by myself. It was a Welsh Championship 12-hour. I've never done a 12-hour. I had no idea what I was embarking on.
Simon's chuckling it.
So I had worked out all my food and water strategy, which went perfectly planned. But if he'd not been there, I don't know how I'd have done it, because it was in 30 degree heat as well. It was in that heat wave we had 2 years ago.
Rebecca, I've got to ask you, what did you do it in? What did you do it in? What did you do that 12 hour in?
Oh, so I didn't do massively well. I won it. So I got the Welsh Championship. I did 212 miles. I think the heat was against me. So once he got 6 hours in, the heat got to 30 degrees on the bypass. So you're getting heat off the bypass too. And then it was about getting them like socks full with ice, stuffing them down my back. So I really started to lag in the last 6 hours were like the most boring day at work. And you know, you just like want to get off the bike, but you just like keep ticking.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Dean Downing and you're listening to the Brother UK Cycling Podcast.
I mean, we're having this conversation at what I hope is the end of the wettest winter on record. I mean, that feels like a long time ago. It's interesting to hear Phil ask about your family's ability to share in that success. And Michelle, I guess, you know, that's a reward for you too, that the hard work that you put in behind the scenes for Team On Form and for Cam Stefosi, that nobody outside of that world really is aware of, when somebody like Rebecca Durrell is still at the top of the podium and being crowned British Circuit Race Champion, or when Anna and Leah are off to the world tour, that must be hugely rewarding.
Oh, it is, and especially knowing how much hard work Simon has put into it. So, yeah, to sort of see those and just to look at his face when they cross the line or when they're on that podium, yeah, it's all worth it.
You're deflecting the compliment already. I mean, this isn't about the hard work that Simon's put in. Nobody questions that, and that's very visible. He's a very visible and vocal presence in the paddock area. Few people, I think, would come and give you a pat on the back and say, "Oh, well done, Michelle, for getting the casserole done." Absolutely. And yet, without that, none of it works.
Yeah, and I suppose the days that, because I don't go to all the races, so you know, when he has been away at a race, you know, make sure that when he comes home, there's a dinner and there's no stress or pressure when he walks in the door to, you know, mow the grass or put the bins out or, you know, anything like that. So, yeah, just try and support the best way I can, really.
Are there periods where it doesn't seem worthwhile, where you think, I wish we could just be normal for a change? Rebecca, that's a question for you too.
I suppose occasionally, but they are very occasional. I knew what I was
signing up
into.
For.
Yes. Yeah, and sort of friends don't, or obviously that don't understand or that aren't, have no knowledge, they just go, why?
Mm.
And you know, but say I knew what I was signing up for.
Is there a support network within the support network? And let me explain what I mean by that. You are helping Simon. Doubtless there will be partners, relatives, helping other team managers, other teams throughout the sport. You began by telling us it's still a very close-knit community, that the faces and the names that you recognise from 30, 40 years ago are still there now. Do you as helpers all get together at the side of the road and share stories?
Yeah, I think so. Sort of on the team last year, sort of Anna Henderson's mum, Janet.
Yes.
We have quite a lot of contact with them. So, you know, whenever you get to a race or we see sort of Janet away from races, that's always really nice because she does, you know.
She's brilliant.
Great baker as well.
I'm just thinking now kind of what the Tinder profile for Simon actually looks like. It's kind of like, you know, here it is, you know, weekends in vans, long, yes, you know, meals at service stations, you know, sleeping overnight in, you know, in travel lodges all over the country, you know, sorting kit out. You know, you'd be looking at it going, that is definitely a swipe.
It's quite enough.
You didn't.
It's quite enticing.
You didn't.
Not always the most glamorous.
Exactly. So there's a real, you know, I think maybe, I guess, with your brother and stuff, that having that sort of experience of that journey has sort of, again, sort of pre-prepared you for,
yes,
for life,
yes,
with Simon.
Definitely.
But it certainly, it takes a hell of a lot of commitment, you know, in my experience, in my view, in my knowledge so far. And I've seen, you know, been to races and seen you at the pits, and wherever you can, you're there. Mm. And you're around, and you're just sort of that capable pair of hands, that sort of, you're very calm as a person, sort of having got to know you a little bit. And I think that, you know, in amongst race day, one thing I've learned is whenever I go to the pits as a sponsor on race day, I try and keep it fairly low, i.e. don't try and talk to the DS too much. Don't try and engage with the riders too much when they're trying to do, think about the warm-up and all that kind of stuff. It's actually, you do it after the race. You have a chat then and of how are you and how are things gone and so on. Because before, you just sort of get in the way a bit because they're doing so much. They've got so much going on in their heads and everyone's asking Simon stuff and he's got, something's gone missing and someone's come and forgot their gloves and, you know, and you're running around having to sort of sort it all out. So having that extra pair of hands, I've realised over the years, is kind of really, really important.
I very much sort of step back when we get to a race. I just sort of, I'll get out of the van and then I'll perhaps go for a wander, get a coffee and just sort of be in the background really in case I'm needed for anything. But yeah, certainly don't think about, you know, asking what we might do next weekend or...
your work is done by that point, I guess, Michelle.
Yeah, usually. Obviously there are times when, you know, I've been to races and, you know, say on a really hot day and we haven't perhaps got enough water, so it's then, you know, go and find a supermarket and get some more water or get some food.
Race day for me, there's one main thing that I'll always require and that's a can of Coke. we talk about this enthusiasm, adrenaline, all those things. If I don't have the can of Coke, my life isn't balanced. So, and actually, interestingly, we mentioned about Michelle's work and what she does during the race. You've mentioned the Crit Champs when Anna Henderson won. I think that was, you went for two actually, didn't we? So we had two cans of Coke that day. So yeah, I was like, Michelle, I was in the pits. Michelle, I need a can of Coke. So that was quite a, you know, an important thing actually, because my levels of, I don't know, my tension, I guess, and my adrenaline was getting so high that actually it needed controlling. So yeah, so the sugar balance was needed. So to make me bring myself back into control of that 45 minutes, that hour of racing. So.
Wow. Well, we're talking about Anna Henderson in passing, even including her mother. And I mentioned Beck Sturrell earlier. It would be a good opportunity, I think, within the context of this podcast to discuss the inside story between that handover from Brother UK to Fosse, Power by On Form to Cams to Fosse, because I'm lucky enough to know this story. It's uncommon within cycling that one major sponsor makes room for another and allows the project to continue. So, Simon, let's start with you. Give us an insight into how that transition occurred.
Yeah, so as you say, you know, it's an unheard of where one sponsor will drop back, I guess is the right word to use, right phrase. Brother UK and Phil, we'd met at the end of last season. We'd obviously had a very, very successful season with Brother UK to Fosse, and it was going to continue. So that was going into year three, because Brother UK obviously also support Team On Form, my development team, or our the original team, is like as I like to call it. And yeah, so all was put in place, everything was signed, the handshake was done for 2020. So, but then, as you say, circumstances changed, and a sponsor did come forward that were willing to invest an amount within the team. And you know, it was a very open conversation, like Phil and I have had since day one, really.
Yeah.
And Phil, even at the meeting where the handshake took place, to say we'll support you in 2020, Phil's words then were, you know, if an opportunity does arise, you know, let's talk about it, let's discuss it, and if it's, you know, if it's beneficial to the riders and to the team and the support team, then, you know, we'll look at it and we'll go with it. So yeah, so Phil and I had that open conversation, and yeah, Phil decided and agreed that actually the best thing to do for the whole British cycling, for the team, you know, if you look at the bigger picture for us, was to step back from the UCI team. But, you know, fantastically enough, she delighted for us that Brother UK decided to carry on with Team On Form. So the partnership, the friendship still stays in place, and who knows what future years will bring. So, yeah, so, you know, it's great. I'm very much, keeping sponsors within the sport is massively important to me. You know, the years of experience I've had in cycling, I've seen so many sponsors come into the sport and then be lost because they've not been looked after, they've not had the promises, et cetera, et cetera. So for me to, and actually that's one of my proudest achievements. You mentioned Rebecca, you've mentioned Anna. Yeah, amazing. Hey, we've won the National Crit Champs 2 years on the trot, which, you know, is fantastic. We've won many races. But for me as a manager, yeah, of course, that's amazing. But to keep the sponsors that we've had from day one and still wanting to support a team and a cycling team is my biggest achievement. In fact, we've mentioned Rittle University College. They've been involved from day one. Brother now are moving into year three. Tifosi, our bike supplier, are moving into year two. There is no sponsor really that has been lost in any way. So, yeah, as I say, as a team owner, that's huge. So, and obviously very grateful that Brother chose to continue, because it's a partnership I want to continue with the team and myself. So.
Phil, give us an insight into your goals as a sponsor in making that relationship happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to plug it also into the roadmap of what was going on in the scene at the time, actually, because we also had, you know, at that end of season, you know, Brother UK Fusion RT coming to an end. And that was a bit of a surprise to us all, actually, because that was run by, you know, a fabulous person, Terry Williamson. And it was just really... Terry's just sort of decided to hang his spurs up, and he got to a time of life where he just couldn't maintain this constant travelling all over the country. And as a result, despite all our efforts, you know, I remember having a phone call with Terry and going, oh, come on, Terry, you know, is there anything we can do? Is this about money? Because actually what I was looking at was the race scene as a whole and going, we need women's teams. The sport needs women's teams and the platform. So suddenly... Fusion had come to an end, and then of course you had, you know, some of those riders moving on. Claire was wanting to go and spend more time in her business in Mallorca, wasn't she, if I recall, and so on. So it was like, okay, so we were at this funny place where suddenly we were one team light in our portfolio. And then of course we met in London, Simon, didn't we, when we were sort of talking about 2020, and I remember we actually sort of shook hands already at that point about going UCI. It was like, let's do it. So that was already happening.
Exactly right, yeah. So you say the 2020 plans were in place, which was great for us at the time because we had the security and we were moving forward. So so it's so important.
And that's, you know, I've learned that in the sport, that actually the one thing you can do as a sponsor for your team is actually give them a handshake as soon as they can, as soon as you can, is commit. And then the team can commit to riders and races and race programs. So we sort of shook hands and said, let's do this, which meant that you could have conversations with everybody that would definitely go in UCI, and you knew you'd have a better race program, etc. So we're all like, brilliant. But of course, then that other phone call came, didn't it? When I bet you probably felt a bit awkward about that phone call to me, which was somebody's turned up with a bigger checkbook than you in reality. That's what I guess is the reality of the situation when you see it for what it is. And I remember that conversation just sort of going, that is that's just the best thing. I'd rather be kicked off with somebody with a massive checkbook, because actually this sport suddenly, yeah, think of what that money's going to do for domestic cycling, for the women's team, you know, how you're going to be able to equip them, the race program. This is actually very good for the sport. So you've got to put your ego aside. And this was not about, oh, you know, hang on, it's Brother UK to Fosie and we want it to stay like that. It was actually, no, that's going to be great. Right, now what should we do? And that's when that sub-conversation came, is actually, why don't we go back and to where we started, which is actually back with On Form. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, let's do that. So, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly right. And as you say, you know, we talk of the UCI team, the elite team, but interestingly, you know, our programme has changed. You know, it's become a European-based programme as much as a UK-based programme. So, you know, and Team On Form might be the development team, but that doesn't mean that we're still not wanting them to be the number one team in the UK and, you know, and win the races that we've won in the past and continue to win. So,
somebody who will share that ambition is sat to your right there, Rebecca. I mean, Phil's given us, and Simon has given us, the sort of structural reality behind that shift in sponsorship. For you, it would have a deeply personal impact. It's literally kept you in the sport. Tell us the story from your perspective.
So it was a bit of a surprise for me as well, actually, when Fusion or Terence, is that Terry, decided to retire, because we had all agreed the 2020 season and we had new team riders lined up. So so when Terry said he was going to retire, I actually, you know, said, you know, well done, and like, really hope, you know, it all goes well for you, because at the end of the day, you know, you can see that he put so much into the sport. He was running around up and down the country, and obviously, you know, he's getting to an age where he looks after his grandchildren quite a lot. So I could see he was a really busy person, but obviously he also needed a bit of rest as well. So it was a bit of a, I say worrying, because I think Phil picked up on the fact that as a team, but also as a rider, having some like security for the next season is really important in terms of like then starting to plan your training and not having to think about that kind of like what's going to happen exactly. So I had a few options in my mind. First of all, is that I went to a team, and secondly, like, worst case scenario, just ride for yourself, you know, that's so try and stay in the scene essentially. But it is really hard. You did mention some like Claire, you know, leaving for to set up a business in Mallorca or carry on her business. And it is really hard actually in the amateur scene because, as Simon said, we train and conduct ourselves in a professional manner, yet we are having to work as well. So kind of keeping that ball rolling is really difficult when you're wanting to do everything well, and sometimes that's not always possible. So when you have extra support and like as a sponsor, it can just tip you over. So Phil really reached out to individual riders and myself included and said, like, how can we keep you in the sport? Recognising that part of the health of the sport and diversity of British racing is relying on, actually, in terms of women's cycling now, women who are needing to work and have a career alongside a professional conduct in their kind of cycling. So he recognised that I was on a kind of cusp of thinking maybe it can't work for me, and offered me that support and also put me in touch with Simon. And it all kind of came together from there, really.
I mean, that's the human impact, isn't it? We recorded a podcast recently with Dean Downing, who rode on Madison Genesis for part of his career. Madison did a fantastic job in supporting that team for a number of years, now has different commercial goals, and that team has come to an end. But the number of young riders who have left the sport completely, a number of really talented young riders, all under 25, won't be racing in 2020. That's the reality when sponsorship goals change or when sponsors leave the sport. And I guess you would have been staring down the barrel of that, Rebecca, after all your hard work, balancing being a mother, running your own business, training, racing week in, week out. Suddenly you're looking at a situation where you might not have been doing any racing at all next season.
Absolutely. You need platforms in which to perform, regardless of whether you're in cycling or in your business. So I luckily had the hill climb platform, which evolved. Now, as the season evolved, it was like August to October. Obviously, I realised I was having to drive up and down the country, and that was costing money. And I took this moment. I said, I'm going to ride this wave, ride this crest. However, it is having an implication on my work, my financial situation, because, you know, you can't work as much because you're Friday to Monday, you're pretty much, you know, out of the picture, you're recovering or you're driving. And then just, like the extra travel accommodation just squeezes you, especially being a single income household, like a single mum. So, so that's, you know, it does have pressures. And then the platform that Brotherhood has given to me, in terms of being an individual rider for the hill climb season, but then also having a team to ride for with Simon. And Simon's been, you know, really kind in allowing that kind of two kind of sided aspect to my cycling. So the benefits that's given me is platform for cycling, as in some actual financial sponsorship from Brother to help me get to those races in the hill climb season, but also a bizarre, it has had a different platform, which is a business platform. So it has actually resulted in me getting more work through, you know, it's providing a bigger picture that I hadn't kind of anticipated. And now that I see the relationship between cycling and my business, I just start to realise that actually there's more reasons to bike than just my actual athletic performance. It's benefiting my business as well.
And gives an insight into that business. I've used the word architect. I know that only describes a small part of what you do.
I work for myself. Yep. So I do architecture. I came from a kind of construction background, but also I did all the kind of traditional architectural training. So I have a project management kind of cap on as well because of my dad's building business. I get clients who are now coming to me because of my cycling endeavours. And then also some of the pieces you've written about me are on my website. People read them. But yeah, it's fantastic. It's working. It's
wonderful to hear. Let's bring it back to a sporting sense. What do you have any definite goals for 2020? Is this a continuing, and I'm talking specifically about the road, is this a continuing part of your education, or are you now at a stage where you have specific targets? Perhaps I should be asking Simon.
I have specific targets. Last year, my overall goal was just to learn about teamwork and team kind of the tactics, and this year, and you get to the end of the season, you're a bit tired, and you're thinking, I don't really see myself wanting to progress, but then you get a bit fresh. I've got a couple of big targets, one premier that I'm targeting, Tour of the Reservoir, all my training is specific to that. There'll be other premiers that I'll be looking to kind of target around it, but in a kind of B goal kind of strategy. Yeah,
target's an interesting question, really, because you know, as bike racers, you do race week in, week out. You know, sometimes you might be doing two or three races a week, and it's very important that targets are, you know, focused on your abilities. But you'll also be in positions throughout that season. You hope that where a rider might actually still achieve something they wasn't expecting to achieve or targeted to achieve, and actually might be their greatest result for the season. So, and it sort of goes back to my opinion on riders pigeonholing themselves. The trouble with targets is that riders can often target a race they believe suits them best, which is true, because obviously that goes from, you know, previous results. But yeah, my view is that you also need to make sure that, you know, yes, you set your targets, but you know that there are many other opportunities that will come and rise above, and actually that you need to take at that moment in time. So so it's an interesting question.
maybe the wrong phrase. What are the in the broadest sense, I mean, your goals for On Form in 2020?
Yeah, so again, actually, it's going to sound crazy, this, because the sporting is all about results and achievement. But actually, I'm more focused on the achievement side. And results come. Yeah, we mentioned already about the happy rider is a good rider. You know, and if we finish the season with every rider having, you know, with a smile on their face, it means we've achieved a huge amount, because actually they've probably achieved the results and met their targets, their personal goals that they wanted to achieve. So, for a rider to finish with a smile on their face and, you know, a few wins along the way, it's about riders enjoying riding their bikes. And one of the reasons, you know, this team exists is I've seen, and you mentioned Madison, for example, dropping out, and riders not being able to find new teams. The reason the team exists, amongst obviously other reasons, but it's during my time as a bike rider and as a manager, I've seen so many riders come into the sport and be lost. You know, similar to what Rebecca was saying, where she was unsure of the next pathway to take. And that breaks my heart a little bit, really, seeing riders who I see as, you know, huge potential and ability to do well, to then be lost to the sport because there's not an opportunity for them. So that's really what my goal is, you know, is to prove opportunities. Those opportunities that Rebecca's mentioned, you've mentioned, actually for riders to achieve what they want to achieve and get from the sport, which, as I've mentioned also previously, is something I've been involved with for many years and, you know, very, very passionate about. So.
Now, Simon, obviously you're also uniquely positioned to comment on life in the scene from a manager's perspective. So obviously we've just had the race programme recently launched for 2020. So what's your current view about what's going on in the scene, you know, the race program? So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, firstly, as a rider's perspective and as a team manager's perspective, you have to be positive. It's very easy to become negative about what's not there, but let's focus on what is there. So, you know, a Lincoln Grand Prix is our first national series. It's an amazing race. I've been going to that race now for, well, how many years? 30 years, I guess. 30 years. It was the Junior National Championships many, many years ago when I was 17. I've probably gone to that race every year since. It's a huge race. It's a fantastic event to be on. So let's focus on those positives, those races that are still there. Tour of Reservoir has been mentioned. It's a two-day stage race. Very hilly, very tough. And actually, a comment that was made last year by the winner who was on our team last year, you know, it was harder than the Tour of Yorkshire. So, you know, so a tough, tough race. So there are races in our calendar that are exciting, are tough, are challenging and ultimately rewarding if you do well or you achieve your goal, whatever that might be, whatever your goal might be in that race. So, you know, let's focus on the positives.
And the other thing that we were sort of chatting over breakfast this morning, just I guess because today's the announcement's been made about almost all the classics being cancelled. And obviously you've got races booked, travel booked and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, how do you keep the riders sort of motivated, fit, when effectively it looks like at the minute a lot of the race programme is sort of disappearing in front of our eyes?
Yeah, it's challenging. It's going to be challenging. There's no question about that. We have to be... the benefit, I guess, to the riders and to the teams, it's the start of the season. So really what we're doing, you're delaying the start of the season. Winters are long, unfortunately, in the sense of, you know, every rider's always itching to get back into the race scene. Coaches obviously play a big part in that role. It's the coach's job, you know, to make sure that rider does stay fit, stay well. And we're looking to put into place other weekends. So, for example, we have just come back from a training camp in southern Spain. We were due to go to Belgium next weekend for a UCI 1.1 race. actually now that's been cancelled, like obviously all racing has in Europe, and at the moment it looks like we'll be doing a tour of Yorkshire recce, so we'll actually do a mini camp those 2 days. So yeah, it's putting in places to keep bringing the girls or the team together on a fairly regular basis so that everyone does stay motivated, like you say. So.
On a practical level, what happens about things like hotel bookings and all that kind of stuff? So, because, teams need money. Money gets committed to things like that. Then you're not doing it. So I guess the upside is, look, you're not paying the petrol now because you don't have to drive there and back. But actually, things like the hotel bookings that you've made, do you think have you had to put deposits down? And, do you think you're going to lose that money? So race entry fees, etc. So what actually happens? Because not everyone might know.
I wish I knew the answer. Oh. So literally it was yesterday was the first instance where we were sort of made aware that races were to be cancelled. And now we've seen Austria. The percentage, if not all races, now cancelled in Europe. Our bookings have been made, our hotels have been made, our tunnel crossings have been made. So at this stage, I don't know what or where, what the cancellation policies are, etc., or if an insurance is in place. So, it'll be something I'll be looking into once we've finished this podcast, actually.
Well, gosh, what a way to end. I mean, we couldn't have begun this year thinking about something called the coronavirus, and now it's decimating the calendar. Simon, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. And Michelle, thank you. Rebecca, thank you. And we hope you'll be staying with us to discuss hill climbing in depth in a later episode. One thing we like to do is a social shout out to make sure that everybody's social media handles are out there in the public. Simon, you're looking worried. And to make sure that
remembering what they are,
people can follow you. Well, I have a note. So starting with Cam Stefosi, if you want to follow Cam Stefosi on Instagram, then it's Cam's, all in capitals, _Tefosi. On Twitter, it's all one word, @CamStefosi. And that's the same too on Facebook, all one word. For Team On Form on Instagram, it is just that, Team On Form. On Twitter, it's Cycle Team On Form. And on Facebook, it's just Team On Form. Rebecca, you're variously Rebecca Box, all kinds of things. Give us your social handles.
So on Instagram it's Box_Richardson, and then on Facebook you can find me as Rebecca Richardson, and I'm not so sure about Twitter actually.
I think you're RRA Design.
Oh yeah, RRA Design. Yeah, that's probably the most important one really, my business handle.
And of course the man to my right is,
oh yes, you can find me at Roadphil.
And if you'd like to follow the Brother Cycling channels, then I implore you to do so at Brother Cycling.
So, Tim, that was a really interesting episode, wasn't it? Having Simon, Michelle and Rebecca here. Because I think what we were trying to bring out in that episode was actually how important it is that actually it's not just the riders and the managers, but actually they all need support structures behind them. And they all have support structures behind them. And it's so essential in order for the race scene to, be what it is, that those people exist.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so easy to fall into that trap of going to a major bike race, seeing the gleaming cars, the beautiful bikes, the honed athletes, and thinking, this is a world completely divorced from anything that goes on in real life. The reality is real life supports that world. And if there isn't people like Michelle, and if riders like Rebecca can't call upon their families for essential support like childcare, nothing else happens.
Yeah, and I thought what's also really, really interesting, and one thing I'll say about Simon is, obviously I've dealt with him now for nearly 3 years from a commercial capacity, is I've always enjoyed the fact that I'll have an honest conversation with you. And, when you're in business, the one thing you always want is actually just be straight with me. Tell me the facts. What is it we need to deal with? And I can remember when we did have that difficult phone call one day, I actually was thinking, and I was putting myself in Simon's shoes going, he really must be, not comfortable about making this call to me at the time, his lead sponsor, to say somebody has come and I've got to have a difficult conversation with you. And I was like, Simon, it's completely okay, let's have this chat, because I know the actual outcome of this chat in the bigger picture is going to be very, very good, and it's going to benefit a lot more people than the things that we want out of an individual sponsorship. So, I think he's very good at that. And, a lot of managers could learn from the way that he operates with his sponsors.
Yeah, he's straight down the line, isn't he? What you see with Simon is what you get. And, to put that in another context, when I asked him, almost the inevitable question. You've managed a UCI men's team. You're now managing a UCI women's team. What's the difference? And you know, the answer is there is no difference. I'm Simon. You know, I manage men and women in exactly the same way.
So coming up on our next episode, we've got two fantastic studio guests in Adam Kenway and Rebecca Richardson, both incredible hill climbers in the UK scene. And we're going to call that one Flat Caps and Frying Pans, where you're going to learn about what it is that they do that can take them to this really dark place whilst climbing a hill and produce some of the best performances whilst at the same time growing themselves and their individual physical and mental capacity. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.